Gene Homnick.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Koenig.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
I'm David Salvin.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Astronaut.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Full Contact Fighter Radio is the name of the show, and my name is Kelsey Mowat, coming to you live from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Kelsey. Very well, thanks.
Super, super.
Co-host? Am I co-host now?
Yeah, I think I should be, you know, careful about calling you a co-host. Maybe.
I like to think of myself more as an interweb transient.
Yeah, I think you should just be more, regarded as, insignificant, sort of like, remember when... Conan O'Brien had his sidekick, Andy Richter?
Yes.
Yeah. So you should be more like Andy Richter. You know, like, I run the show, everyone remembers me, but then you throw in the occasional funny blurb like Andy Richter did.
Ah, I see. Maybe we can have Andy Richter on the show.
Yeah, I always liked Andy Richter, to tell you the truth. He was a funny guy.
I like that Andy Richter.
Yeah. And today we're going to have a guy who's also known for... spewing some funny lines from time to time. Forrest Griffin's going to be joining us today, Brendan.
Finally, we get some high caliber, high moral fiber in our diet.
Yes, and of course he's taking on Stephen Bonner, August 26th, the undercard to Chuck Liddell or Renato Sobral, and should be a good fight. And we'll talk to him and hear his thoughts. He's been training down in Vegas, and we'll get him on the show here right away.
Anything else, Kelsey? Are we doing anything else today?
I think we're going to do the picks. We're going to do afterwards, after we talk to Forrest, we're going to start keeping track of our picks here, you know. I remember, and see, this is why, I was thinking the other day that I had soundly defeated you as far as picking correctly at the last UFC. Tim Sylvia beating Andrei Arlovski comes to mind right away. And I wanted to have some stats to back that up, and I was just too lazy to go and actually listen to the show. So I started thinking, I should start keeping track of the picks and rub your face in it as often as I can.
All right. If there are any betting people out there, when I make my picks, bet against me. And
yes.
You'll probably actually win a lot of money.
I'd agree with that, yeah. I remember the Tito Ortiz, Ken Shamrock, we both picked Tito, but I had predicted that Ken would last longer, and you thought that was a silly idea, and you were right on that one. But... nonetheless, the actual picks, I remember in particular, you were being quite cocky about the fact that I picked Tim Sylvia to win. And, of course, as we all know, he won and made me look like a pretty sharp MMA writer, which I'm most certainly not. But let's move on.
I have a new theory about Andrei Arlovski.
Mm-hmm.
This is my theory, and it goes back... you'll have to be patient here, because it goes back... a few thousand years. Samson and Delilah. What was Samson's weakness?
Couldn't have his haircut?
Yes, couldn't have his haircut. What has Arlovski started doing since he's become famous?
Did he cut his hair?
Waxing his back.
Right, that's right.
He had a proud back full of very, very nice dark curly hair before.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he comes out nude.
Loses
so maybe no one has, no one's thought about this. But his last two fights, where he's shown great susceptibility, those have a direct correlation with the absence of back and shoulder hair.
Right.
So and I'm maybe not sure which it is.
Maybe with that knee injury, maybe there is some kind of connection as well, that he's weaker without having the back hair.
Knee injury?
Well, there is...
You can overcome knee injuries, but you can't overcome the absence of strength-giving hair.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly something to consider, and maybe we should try getting him on the show and discuss this with him.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to want to talk about that, man. In fact, I'm not sure the rest of the listeners really want to talk about back hair. So let's move on to
Bible,
Forrest Griffin.
But come on.
Yeah,
All right.
I know. All right, stay tuned. Forrest Griffin coming up next, Full Contact Fighter Radio. By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, All your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Militich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Militich versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.tv.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is the incomparable Mr. Forrest Griffin. Forrest, how are you doing today?
Well, that's kind of a private, personal question.
Right.
And I'm going to exercise my right not to answer that.
Fair enough.
Forrest, I'm doing wonderful.
We go deep on this show.
Yeah. And you can thank the publicist for telling me.
Deep or just deep? We're talking philosophical deep or?
Balls deep and then some. Elbow deep, Forrest. Elbow deep.
Right. Yes.
Now Kelsey has to edit that out later.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Forrest, you're training down in Vegas. Can you just fill in the listeners on who you've been training with and how's that been coming along?
Sure. I'd like to give a little shout out to all my training partners. Mike Pyle, Jay Heron, Alex Schellenhauer, John Wood, Graham Maynard, buddy of mine, Nick Fischetti, came in town. Roy Nelson, Mark Beecher, and Ron Frazier.
Mm, okay.
And Forrest, is that at the UFC Training Center?
On occasion.
What exactly is that set up? Can any of the UFC fighters just go train there, or is it a private gym, or exactly? If people refer to it, what
sure.
is it?
I'm not really sure. I'm not being obtuse. I just really have no idea. Sometimes I call and they say you can train there. Sometimes they say, no. So, it's what it is. But we always got the little Zion's Training Center to fall back on. Problem with that is the kids want to work out when I want to work out. I don't want to work out 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds.
Yeah, I could understand that. Now, of course,
that is sometimes the level that my fighting is on, but I'm not sure it's really going to help me.
Right. Of course, we should add on what you are training for in case some of those out there listening do not know.
I'm going to fight Stephen Bonner in about 10 days here.
Right, August 26th at the upcoming UFC. Now, Forrest, a lot of people are beginning to talk about what everyone can expect in that fight and whether or not Stephen might adapt his fight plan, his game plan for the August 26th fight. What are you expecting? Do you think it's going to kind of unfold the same way it did the first time around, or do you think he might change things up in light of the way his last couple fights have unfolded?
I don't know. I mean, he boxed with me last time, and it worked out all right for him, you know? It wasn't like, certainly, you know, it was such a close fight, you know, I think, whatever. But, you know, I think if you look at the fight as a whole, he definitely landed more shots. And the length of his jab troubled me. I'm used to, at 205, I'm used to being the one that can sort of set stuff up off my jab. And, you know, he was able to land his jab. I couldn't land mine. I'm actually pretty decent on the ground. I don't see why he'd want to take me down. But, that's right. I know. Because Tito pounded the crap out of me, and I did nothing but lay there like a hurt something or other. So, yeah, maybe after seeing that, you know, he's thinking, I'll just take him down, beat him up, or, you know, gypped him. But I guess it's one of the things you gotta prepare for everything, but I don't see why he wouldn't stand up and try the Muay Thai. It was a bad game plan for Rashad. Better game plan for me. It's not like I'm some threat wrestler, you know.
Yeah.
Would you be surprised for us if it turned out to be another Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
No, I mean, I'm comfortable with that kind of fight for whatever reason. I don't know. I liked it.
Now, you know, you mentioned Stefan's last couple fights, and, he had some trouble against Keith Jardine. He did come away with the victory. Some people had it scored for Jardine, and then against Rashad, Rashad took him down and did that kind of stifling style. What are your thoughts on Rashad Evans? You know, he was on our show and basically was saying that he still feels that people don't give him the respect he deserves. Do you agree with that, Forrest? Do you think people out there maybe don't give Rashad Evans the respect that he deserves?
No, I think people respect him. Guy's undefeated. He's had success as a heavyweight. You know, I definitely respect him. Here's the thing. People don't get excited by him because he's had some boring fights. Because his fight against Sam was, his fight in the finale was one of the better fights I've ever seen. That was an awesome fight, you know? But against Sam, not the greatest fight. And again, against Bonner, you know, not the most active guy on top. And I think that's why he certainly has the respect, but maybe not the hype. But I think if he would have continued to fight like he did in that Brad Adams fight and just really made stuff happen, that he'd be one of the most, you know, fighters that people are most excited about right now.
For us, we talked to a lot of fighters about this on the show, and you seem to naturally have a sort of exciting style. You're not particularly apprehensive about standing up and throwing, and you're fairly dynamic. But there's a lot of fighters out there who have now sort of been criticized as being the quote unquote boring fighter. How much do you think that fighters should have to think about also performing as well as winning? And do you think there should be do you think what role do you see as fighters as having to strike a balance between those two things?
You know what? Your job's to win fights. Any way you can. Any way you have to. It doesn't have to be the best thing in the world. You win fights, you're gonna get a paycheck, you're gonna move on. The only exception I can think maybe to that is Matt Lindland. But when he was winning fights, they couldn't find a reason not to hype him up, even if they didn't like his style. But, you know, and then when he started losing, it was like, well, you know, he's a boring guy, he's lost a couple fights, blah, blah, blah. So I think for the most part, your job is just to win fights any way you can.
Now, you mentioned the fight with Tito Ortiz, and you talked about the fact that you know, saying that you thought you got beat on a little bit when you're on the ground. But, you know, man, I know I'm not the first one to tell you this. A lot of people have seen that fight. I myself have watched it a few times. And, you know, there's quite a few people out there who said you could have been given the split decision victory. I take it from your comments that you have not changed your mind since your comments on the fight right immediately after the fight with Tito?
I don't know. Here's the deal, man. I remember I fought Jeff Munson one time, and he beat the crap out of me the first round. He beat the crap out of me the second round. Third round, he gasped, and I beat him up. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, that sucks. I lost that fight. If I would have had a little more, you know, he was done. I could have maybe finished him. And then they were like, winner, Forrest Griffin. I was like, what? And I'm standing there with Stefan the first go-round, and I said, definitely an overtime. Definitely an overtime. Because they just mentioned that to us. Oh, by the way, guys, if it's a draw, after 15, you guys go another 3, and I said, all right. I was just mentally preparing myself. I was like, 3 minutes is nothing. 3 minutes is nothing. You can do a sprint for 3 minutes. It's nothing. You can win this fight. And then they were like, oh, you won. You don't have to go 3 more minutes. So, you know, you leave it in the judges. You get what you get. And to tell you the truth, I've gotten more good than bad, and that's probably just because I smile a lot when I fight. So I'm not the one that can really bitch about decisions. I've been fortunate.
Well, do you think, Forrest, that we should see more draws in MMA?
Do I think we should or well?
Yeah. Do you think we should? Like, does it pain you that the fact that there's, especially this year, there have been so many decisions that could have gone either way? Do you think that's unfair? Should we see more draws?
Nah, man. That's just the nature of the beast, man. That's the sport, you know? I mean, people have criticized boxing for a million years for that. Sometimes I watch boxing matches and I'm just like, you know, who's scoring this fight? you know? And I guess it's harder because it's 12 rounds or whatever, but still, you're like, wow. It's not an easy sport to judge. It isn't. So, you take what you get. You try and finish guys. That way there's no decision to be made. So,
well, looking, I realize you're not going to want to look at, past your fight with Stefan, but would you be open to an opportunity to fight Tito again at some point in the future?
Of course. That's a fight he wants to happen. That's a fight I want to happen. So hopefully it'll happen eventually. It's like you said, though. I got my hands full of pissed off Stefan right now. That's plenty enough for me to worry about.
Yeah.
Do you see your? It seems that even though you're both coming off, you're both coming off losses, that your momentum is somehow perceived, I think, as being a little bit different than Stefan's. Do you think there's truth to that, or do you think that's just a misperception?
I don't know. I mean, I'll take it. If it's the case, I'll take it and be happy with it. But I don't know. I lost my last fight just like him. I lost to a wrestler that held me down just like him. So, either way, it's not, it doesn't matter. The thing is, one of the things I got into this, I was thinking, I never want to lose two fights in a row. And, don't do that. Don't lose fights or you can disappear. And I kind of, for whatever reason, the first loss was a good one. I got a little saving grace, but don't lose two in a row. You'd be fighting for nothing again in nobody arenas in Hicksville. That's not where I'm looking to go with my career.
Forrest, recently a couple of fellow Ultimate Fighter participants in Diego Sanchez and Chris Lieben have made some public comments on through interviews, radio shows, and whatnot, just sort of voicing their displeasure with their current contracts and the situation that some of the fellow Ultimate Fighters that have been left with, contractually speaking. With this growth of the sport since the show first came on, Forrest, do you have any thoughts on that, or do you just kind of care to, keep moving on?
I'll give you a little comment on that. It's a trickle down, man. For years, the UFC wasn't making money, and now the UFC's making money. Well, they're gonna make their money before we see it. You know what I'm saying? If things continue to go well and the UFC makes their money, we will start getting paid more. The fact is, too, you got to remember what I always keep in the back of my head. I remember fighting two fights in one night, getting the crap beat out of me, not being able to walk out of the arena, not being able to insure, and being happy that I had that check for $500. I remember that. That wasn't that far afield for me.
Yeah.
And that's totally a true story. I fought two tough guys. One of them was Kevin Jordan, who just kicked the crap out of my leg for 5 minutes. And, I ended up winning that fight, and I made $500. I was like, yes, $500. Now I could, fix my car or something. I don't even remember. So, you kind of gotta just remember where I was 2 years ago when I was working, 50 hours a week for $30,000
right.
A year. I can make that in a night if I hustle with the sponsors and if I win fights. So I'll be the last one to whine and bitch about money.
So Forrest, going back to that point in your life, you were a police officer for a time and actually quit that job to go on the reality show. Don't get me wrong if I say this, but you really don't seem, and no offense to cops, but you really don't seem like you have the personality type to be a cop, especially a Southern cop. Was that something you loved? Was that something that you were drawn to, or was it a job for you, or did you fit?
No, I enjoyed it. Let me tell you. I'm gonna give you the. I'm afraid I'm gonna have to give you the spiel. This is the spiel I gave them when they said, brought me in the office, and they said, Forrest Griffin, why do you want to be a police officer? I said, well, I enjoy helping people, and I love being a police officer because for 8 to 12 hours a day, I get to drive around and just be a good Samaritan. And sometimes you help people by taking them to jail. Sometimes you help other people by taking people to jail. Sometimes you help them by, giving them a ride somewhere, putting gas in their car. It's a job about helping the community and helping people. And there's a lot of reward in that. You know, there's a lot of frustration because people always, they give you that, the damn police, you know, right off the bat. You know you're starting behind the eight ball with a negative viewpoint. They have a negative view of you. It's kind of like fighting, you know. People think, oh, this guy's a fighter. He must be some sort of crazy meathead psychopath that wants to hurt me. So you have to work that much harder to turn that around and say, no, you know, I'm a pretty bright guy. I'm a really nice guy. I fight because it's a good adrenaline rush, and I enjoy it, but I'm not looking to hurt people, you know. I was a cop because sometimes it was a great adrenaline rush. I got to help people. I wasn't looking to, you know, make myself feel big for whatever reason. And most cops aren't. It's just they get that way because they see the worst in people every day, you know, and it's really, really tough to stay. You know, I wasn't a cop for that long, so it never really had that effect on me, but you got to understand, they're seeing people at their worst every day. You know, the worst element on their worst behavior. So, you know, everywhere they walk into, they have to overcome that negative stereotype. So, you know, it's kind of it's a tough gig.
So it almost sounds for us like
I made a relation between the two sports. And,
that was a beautiful speed.
In law enforcement.
Yeah.
That's my next question. You seem to have the type of personality that should be a cop. You know, my next question is, do you have the personality type that should be a fighter? You know, it seems that there's always been these really interesting distinctions between fighters who generally seem to have relatively a fair amount of goodwill towards their fellow fighters and a great amount of respect, and then there's fighters who seem to have to vilify their opponent regardless of who they are or what they've done. Which do you play into one or the other?
I got a theory for that too. You know, it's kind of like Tito made me out to be a bad guy when I'm not. You know, as far as I go, you do whatever you got to do in your head to fight your fight. You know, and if that means I'm a dirty, no good scoundrel, and you have to make me out to be that, you do that, fine. But leave me out of it. I don't want it. You know, I want to fight you for one day. You know, I don't want to talk to you the week of the fight. I don't want to talk to you after the fight, you know, after the fight, I really don't care, but, you know, I just don't want to hate you or like you, I just don't want to be around you.
Are you referring to the allegations of the greasy legs, Forrest? Is that what you're referring to as far as Tito's comments?
Oh, no, that was kind of an after the fact blow there, which, you know, I don't know, that's just sort of annoying. I don't really know what to say about that, you know? Watch the tape close. Is there grease on my leg? No. You know, one time he shot a takedown, he comes up and he looks at his gloves. You know?
Yeah,
and I was like,
wonder what he's
doing that for, you know?
So what comments are you talking about then, if it wasn't the greasy leg syndrome?
Say what now?
What comments are you referring to then? You said he tried to vilify
you. No, not anything he said publicly, just the way his interaction towards me changed. You know, I met him a couple months before. You know, he's a pretty nice guy. We talked, whatever. As soon as the date was set and it was a done deal, I was a bad guy in his mind. And I guess that's what you got to do. That's what some guys got to do. And I've had other guys that did that too. You know, I was just speaking in generalities there. A lot of guys do that. You know, you need to do that. You need to feel like you're the good guy and you're conquering the evil guy or whatever. I don't see it that way. I see it as there's a scarcity of resources. It's human nature to compete for them. You want it, I want it. I'm selfish. I want it more than you want it. I want it for me, you know? That's just human nature. That's not anything I'm doing wrong, you know?
Yeah.
If me and you are both hungry and there's a piece of bread in front, I'm going to fight you for it, you know? I don't owe you anything. I want that bread just like you do, you know? That's just the nature of the beast. That's human nature. That's something I've never tried to fight. You know, I want to win this fight. I need to win this fight, you know? So does he. But, you know, it's just, I'm not going to give it to him because he needs it.
Well, while we're...
Makes sense?
That makes sense.
You may be the first Darwinian fighter that we've talked to, Forrest.
Yeah.
Well, we're on the topic of Tito, and we were talking to Chris Lieben last week as he gets ready for his fight, I guess this Thursday. But and we asked him his thoughts as a fighter on the what appears to be now signed up and a done deal, Tito Ortiz, Ken Shamrock, 3. For us as a fighter, do you have any interest in that fight? Do you think that, you know, I know you obviously don't want to diss your employer, but, you know, are you highly anticipating a third round of that rivalry?
You know, only because I would have liked to see Ken get going a little bit. You know, he sounded like he had some promise, like he was going somewhere with it. You know, mm-hmm. And I think maybe it's free this time, so it'll catch a little different viewer than it did last time. You know, maybe people aren't willing to want to pay to see that fight. But on free TV, you'll watch it, right?
Oh,
so
sure,
it's not bad. It's not bad marketing, and it's good to see them give a guy a second chance or even a third chance like that. You know?
Yeah.
What do you think about there were seemingly wide protests from some that the second fight had an early stoppage, and we've seen a lot of fights, especially Japanese fights. I don't know if you saw the K-1 Hero show, but Sakuraba took an incredible beating just recently, a couple weeks ago. What do you think? What do you think about the whole idea of the quote unquote early stoppage? Did you agree with that particular fight? Since we have that, we can use that as our point of reference. Was that an early stoppage?
First of all, I think Dean is actually my favorite ref, and I think he had the best comment. You know, if a guy's out and gets dazed, the fight's over. It's not my responsibility how fast he comes back. I thought it looked like Ken Shamrock was out for a second and then came back. Now, I've only seen it the one time live, so I could be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. But that's what it appeared to me, so that'd make it a justifiable stoppage. The other thing is there's a balance to be had, you know? We're still that fringe sport. We're still that I don't even know what to say, that you know, no holds barred, brutal, bloody. We've got to overcome that a little bit. And, you know, people, you know, so if you let fights keep going a lot of times, you know, it's really hard to say, no, we're a real sport, you know, this, that, the other. We're safer than, you know, football as far as brain injuries and boxing, et cetera. And you quote the statistics, but when people see a beatdown with guys not even really defending themselves, it makes it hard to justify that you're not a blood sport, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fine line, man, and you know, bottom line, that's not my job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly some people were saying that, you know, referees perhaps should look more into the past of fighters, and I know Ken Shamrock had also made that comment.
You know, you're thinking about all that, you got less than a second to determine that, so throw that out the window, man. You know, the past, this, that, the other, you're going to make an analytical situation. I would justify it as JPS, justified police shooting programs. You've got to look. This guy does not have time to sit down like you're doing, watch the replay, think about it. Boom. Do or die. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes his decision. Do I fire? Do I not fire? Do I stop the fight? Do I not stop the fight? And he's got less than a second to make that decision. You know, it's not like he can sit back and, you know, Monday quarterback it or whatever the hell, I'm sure Monday whatever you call it. And, you know, take his time, break down. Well, you know, Kings notoriously had a good chin, da-da-da-da-da, you know. It's one of those things. He doesn't have all those benefits that you and I have in recalculating that fight.
Well, for us, with Brennan and I both being Canadians, we care to say Hockey Night in Canada it when we're talking about analysis. A little different than Monday Night Football. We're not too familiar.
There you go. Sure, whatever. Whatever, you damn Canucks.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done with this interview. I didn't know you were Canadian.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Canadian chicks are hot and friendly.
Yes indeed.
Forrest, what do you think about fighters then who come back and complain about early stoppages? Do you think that gives everyone a disservice? I personally think that people don't appreciate the negative impact that a serious injury in the ring could have on the sport. Literally, I think it could slam the brakes on the sport for a good long time. So does it bother you when fighters come out and say, oh, it's fine, or, you know, they shouldn't stop this early fight? Do you think you have a responsibility to stick together and have some kind of solidarity surrounding fighter safety?
I don't know about that. I mean, you know, you feel like you got, you know, the shaft, and you feel like you got the shaft, you might as well say it, you know? You gotta also look at the kind of the ego. You need to feel that way as a fighter. That should be what you're saying. You know, this is an ego-driven sport. It's healthy to have an ego in this sport, to have self-confidence, to feel like, you know, I was just this close to victory, because that way, you know, I wasn't in trouble, etc. You know, no, man, the guy in question, Ken, in this, you know, if he felt like he was fine and ready to go, he popped up and wanted to fight, nothing in the world wrong with him saying, hey, man, I wanted more, you know, I was good, I was fine, there's nothing wrong with that, you know what I mean? Look at, you know, I took quite a beating by Tito, you know, they didn't stop the fight, and, you know, I wouldn't have wanted him to, you know? So, and if they'd have stopped it, I'd have freaked out, peed myself, and cried, you know?
No.
In that order? freaked out, peed myself, and cried. Yes. Yes, in that order.
Now, of course, you're fighting on, your fight with Stephen Bonner is with on the card with the main event of Renato Sobral versus Chuck Liddell, and you know, as an MMA writer and radio host, I gotta say, it kind of seems like people are looking past this fight a little too much, in my opinion. There's not a great deal of hype. Yes, you know, everyone's fully aware that Chuck beat him before, but Forrest, as a fighter, do you think that, you know, this fight's going to be a lot closer and competitive than maybe the general fans are thinking right now?
Well, you know what? The important thing is that Chuck knows how good Babalu is. That's the only thing that really matters. People might not really associate Babalu with whatever, but fighters know Babalu's a stud. He's won like a million fights in a row now or something. You know, he hadn't lost since he lost to Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
He beat Shogun. He beat Trevor Prang. He beat Jeremy Horn in the same night with an eye that was swollen shut. I watched him do it. I was freaking amazed.
Yeah.
You know? Guys beat a lot of good people. You know? Travis Yu, what's his name? Who gave Randy a Van Arsdale? Who gave Randy a run for his money? You know,
yeah.
You gotta think this guy's good, and there's nowhere he's not good. He can wrestle, he can box, he can kickbox, and his jiu-jitsu is super. So, you know, but Chuck knows all that.
You got a prediction on that fight? But do you know what I mean? Like, I understand what you're saying. It's important that Chuck understands, but have you been kind of surprised at the lack of hype? You know, it kind of seems like a lot of fans are, you know, not really giving Sobral his due.
I didn't know that until you just told me.
Yeah.
I thought just the opposite, to tell you the truth.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, hey,
yeah,
I'm wrong. It's only my...
But then again, I've never been on a message board in the last 2 years, so you could be right.
Sorry, I was going to ask you, Forrest, do you ever find yourself training with Chuck anymore? I know you guys have John Lewis in common, and John Lewis has cornered Chuck a fair amount of times. Do you guys ever train together?
No, not really. Not anymore. I let him beat me up a little bit before the Horn fight, and I was really impressed. And any chance I get to work out with him, I like to work out with him, because... you know, John Houseman's got some really good stuff, just as far as the way he sets up workouts and lays it out. You know, they got some good ideas, good techniques, you know. But I'm not too far from the point where if I win a couple more fights, maybe I'm fighting Chuck or something like that. So I guess, you know, you don't really want to train together too much, you know.
Well, does John Lewis train with Chuck anymore, and what's their relationship like? Does he just fly out to corner him, or does he go out there and train, or...
Yeah, I don't know. I know when Chuck's in Vegas, he works with Lewis. I don't know exactly. Questions better asked for one of those guys, you know. It ain't really my bread of butter, you know. It ain't really my business.
Forrest, my last question for you is kind of a tie-in with the Chuck Liddell and Sobral thing, and I guess maybe from my perspective or some others, people think that with the hype that surrounded the announcement that Wanderlei Silva might be fighting Chuck Liddell, perhaps is part of the reason that some think that, you know, the fans are looking past this fight a little bit and just assuming Chuck Liddell is going to win. But, you know, hey, I could be wrong. But as a fighter, when you look at the fact that Pride's coming to North America in October and there's been some talks from their end about doing a joint show with the UFC, what does that mean to you as a fighter, and does that excite you, the prospect that you might be able to take on some of their 205 fighters at some point?
Hell no.
No.
Those guys are pretty good, man. I mean, there's enough damn 205ers over here that are good, you know?
Yeah.
No one's popping up every damn day. Sick of it. All these guys are so damn good. I hate it. I gotta be so good.
So you're not prepared to call out Shogun right now on our show? First time?
I should do that now. Let me tell you what. How about I do this when I don't have a fight in 10 days?
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Some of that?
I think that sounds good. Yeah.
Nah, I mean, never mind.
Well, Joe Riggs called out Frank Mir on our show.
Joe Riggs called out Frank Mir?
Yeah. He's done the best stuff.
Riggs clown getting fat again or something?
Yeah.
Fight?
Yeah, it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, mostly egged on by Brendan, but...
Our theory was that Riggs just gets guys to hate him, so people just keep on signing up to fight because there's a gigantic lineup. But you're too amicable, though, for us, so you actually have to earn your way to the top. You can't just talk your way.
Yeah, well, whatever, you know, I'm just trying to fight. I don't know, the thing of it is I gotta get beat up by the guy, you know. At least, you know, if I don't get in a little war with him, I can walk away thinking, yeah, I'm smarter than him. You know, at least I'm smarter than him. Now, what if the guy beats me in like a war of wits? You know, if we start dueling and, you know, he cracks me a couple good ones verbally, and then he beats me up. Then what do I have? What do I have to fall back on? My huge penis? No.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm incredibly wealthy? No. He's got beat me up any smarter than I am. What the hell? I don't need that. Cry myself to sleep as it is.
Well, Brendan, do you have anything else for Forrest?
No, Forrest, it was wonderful for you to engage in a battle of wits with us, and certainly we were bested yet again. So I thank you for coming on the show, especially, and keep up your Darwinian fighting philosophy. I think you should maybe write a little tome when you sit down and retire.
That's great. And future reference, you guys are kind of unarmed for the War of the Wits thing. You should really work on that or something. I don't know. Write some material up ahead of time or something. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you've edged the Canadians this time, buddy. We'll be back. We're stubborn people.
It's like cold weather, man. You got to be tough. But don't worry. Global warming, you guys are going to be the place to be in like 10 more years.
Right.
We're all going to be, it's going to be so hot here in Vegas that I would have to move to Canada.
You might. And like
you said,
does
it actually get hotter without things lighting on fire in Vegas?
I don't know. I'm going to go outside and cook some eggs on the sidewalk right now.
All right, Forrest. Well, thanks for joining us and best of luck on August 23rd. Or 26th.
Thanks a lot, Forrest.
Later, guys.
Take care. Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Thanks again to Forrest Griffin for coming on the show. Some interesting comments from Mr. Griffin, Brendan.
Forrest Griffin reminds me of a smart aleck.
Yes. You know,
he is the stereotypical smart aleck.
I thought I'd throw out a couple questions to him, you know, just get some feedback on his thoughts and with the UFC. And I got to tell you, you know, I respect the guy for supporting his bosses, etc. I mean, he seems like a stand-up guy in that respect. And you know, he kind of knew with someone like him that just going on other things he said in the past, he's very gracious. You know, when he lost to Tito, he was very gracious towards Tito, despite the fact that many people, you know, not many, but they're... I guess you could say many people thought that maybe he won that fight. And, you know, when I asked him about the contract situation and, you know, he's always a very optimistic, upbeat guy and really, you know, no attitude from him at all. He's not egotistical and...
Well, he's fairly philosophical about everything in the fight game. And I think that's just because, you know, even though Forrest came up on the show and gained his popularity in the show, Forrest is a very, very well-rounded and experienced fighter and has lived through some, as he claims, lived through the sort of dark times of MMA. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that can only benefit in that kind of attitude, you know. These guys are winning like 1, 2, 3 fights. Where's my money? You know, pay me now and stuff like that. And so Forrest doesn't buy into that culture of entitlement that, I think a lot of the younger fighters really do, you know. And there are people who are critical of the UFC, I think, and rightly so for underpaying their fighters. But at the same time, you know, you have to step back and say, you have to step back and gain some kind of perspective on what the UFC is trying to do as a business, what their model is, what their expansion role is. And I don't think they're necessarily out there to line their pockets. They've done more for MMA in terms of the profile and its popularity than any other promoter. So, you know, at least they have some interest in making the sport and developing the sport. They're not just in it for a buck, you know.
Yeah, well, I think I agree with that sentiment to an extent. I think time will tell because, you know, only in the last year you've seen significant gains, significant profits for the UFC. So I think, you know, now the true test, the litmus test as far as them trying to build up MMA will be, you know, will come to pass because we'll start to see if guys are still getting $2,500 a show and, you know, $2,500 a win in a year from now. You know, that to me just doesn't wash because if you look at, you can already see it starting to happen. The fighters out there who are fortunate enough to have enough sponsorship to be able to fight often enough and get by, and maybe they do some privates or some instructing on the side, and they train all the time. And then you still have the grassroots fighters who still have to have a full-time job. You're going to start seeing a huge divide, I think, between those talent pools. And I don't think MMA up to this point has really seen that. And I think we're going to see the ramifications of that situation here in the next year or so.
Yeah, I think, well, that's an interesting question. And I think the more mature fighters get and the older they get, they need some kind of stability in their lives, you know, especially fighters who are married and have children. They have other needs that require to be taken care of. So there has to be, you know, positions like that. And at the same time, there'll always be guys who can train 8 hours a day and dedicate their lives when they're, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, and work full-time jobs as well. So those are the guys. There'll always be guys like that. There always have been guys like that who do, you know, amateur sport. And so I don't think that, you know, I think there has to be some security when you become established. But I'm not sure. A lot of amateur athletes, especially Olympic athletes, you know, have eked by for a long time on not much money. So we'll see. Your point's well taken, but I think there's a well-established precedent of people who work their asses off for literally no financial benefit whatsoever. So we'll see. It depends. It depends on how you conceive of what a professional is. So is a professional someone who, you know, has a certain mastery of a skill set, or as a professional, someone who gets paid. The sort of latter is the newer definition, I think, but the former, I think, is probably the more appropriate one.
Well, I guess what I was trying to say, you know, as far as talking about the amount of work needed and whether or not they work full time and whatnot, is that, you know, for much of mixed martial arts, at least in North America, it might not have necessarily been the situation in Japan or in Brazil, but, you know, a lot of the guys who fight on the local cards, you know, they, at a certain point, you were only maybe, you know, 8-0, 9-0, and you were getting your chance in the UFC, although there wasn't that many cards being held back then. So now it's going to be a fine line between the fact that UFC has more positions to fill and also, you know, matching that with and maintaining the level of skill that they've always espoused to have in their fighters. And then thirdly, you know, trying to draw upon fighters who, in these grassroots organizations, are probably the guys who, you know, it depends on whether or not they have enough time to train and whatnot. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at someone like Forrest Griffin, as an example, you know, he was working full-time as a cop and also had a very successful MMA career. You're absolutely right. But now you got to look at it and think, well, think how much more, how better of a fighter is he now in the last year because his life is solely dedicated to training.
Well, yeah, and like I said, I think when you're young and you have, and that's your life, is fighting is your life, you can actually hold down, you know, you take care of a couple different things. When you get older and you have different real life responsibilities, like, family and children and things like that, you need a little bit more security. But I think the amount of people who are coming up, you know, has sort of exponentially increased as well.
Yeah.
You know, so there, yeah. One of the things that surprised me, though, was the UFC, you know, last year and the year before were actually very active in attacking some of the smaller organizations that they saw. I don't know if they perceived them as a threat, but for using words like ultimate and things like that. And that actually was very puzzling to me, because it seems that the UFC requires these organizations to exist, and they have to have some kind of working relationship with them, and the better the relationship is, the better it is. TKO is a great example of a smaller organization they have a great relationship with.
WEC as well.
Yeah, and there were smaller ones in the States that they were actually seemed to have a lot of animosity towards and were looking to stamp out. So it's an interesting question how they want to develop a feeder system. And now that they're expanding to Europe, I think that's another answer to the problem of lack of talent, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, and ideally, I think anyone, most would agree to this, and hopefully it comes to pass, is that at some point mixed martial arts gets to the same kind of playing field that boxing does. Of course, I don't want the muddled belt situation and the horrific confusion that ensues with that in boxing and the blatant ranking issues and controversies that occur within boxing. But as far as the feeding system goes and sort of tossing promotions aside, yes, I know there's still varying disputes as far as promoters go and HBO and Showtime and whatnot. But as far as the main drive of the marketing being behind the fighters, and I think that's ideally what would be the best for mixed martial arts, and most certainly I don't think anyone could dispute this, would be the best for the fighters themselves, because then you've got solely the talent of the fighter, his record, and he's paid for that rather than trying to evaluate his level of skill based on what promotion he's fighting for, which is sometimes the case in mixed martial arts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, UFC is definitely a brand now, and they want to become and have made great efforts to become an identifiable brand, and you can tell that, in the same way that you use the proper brand name for the style, and even I've heard fighters say, I'm an ultimate fighter, even though they fight for different organizations, which must drive them to distraction. And that has become, like the word Xerox, or like the word Google, or like the word Kleenex, as the brand that identifies what the product actually is. And I think that will benefit them to a certain extent. That will benefit them to a certain extent for a while. But I agree with you, as you say. I think when the talent pool becomes, when it becomes the case that, that their talent pool grows weaker, then they've got to start bringing in legitimate contenders from elsewhere. And we saw that with Anderson Silva, what a kerfuffle that caused. Who is this Anderson Silva guy? And how did he beat Lieben so easily? And the hammer comes down on Lieben. Well, no one appreciated that in the world, there are lots of fighters who can compete at every level with any fighter in the UFC. And the question is, how does the UFC balance their brand with the fact that there are fighters who are just as good, or if not better, than UFC fighters?
Well, yeah, and on that note, let's move to it. The Ultimate Fight Night card on Thursday, which is going to be on Spike TV, and then also you're going to have the Ultimate Fighter Season 4 premiere after that card. So let's get some picks going here, Brendan. First fight I want to get a pick from you on is Joe Riggs versus Jason Von Flue at 170 pounds.
Yeah, I've got to go with Von Flue on this one. I think he'll take out Riggs within a minute in the first round.
Okay.
No, I was just joking.
Yeah, I know.
I think Von Flue, I would like to see him put up a gut out, a good effort, and at least take this into the second or third round. But I think Riggs is in a bit of a bad way right now. We just talked to him, we just talked to him recently, and I think he is definitely intent on winning this fight. and if his, I think what all I have to say about this fight is if the only chance Von Flew's got is if Riggs has some kind of serious problem going into the fight, because not to say that Von Flew's a dog or anything like that, but I think Riggs is just on a different level right yep. now. So if Riggs loses, he will have shot himself in the foot somehow, I think. Yeah,
I agree with you. And Joe Riggs, he self-admittedly admitted. He even said on our show that,
what did he call himself, a head case?
Yeah, he's prone to having psychological issues and as far as, getting worked up about fights. But, if he comes into this card in, like you said, in a bad way and bent on destroying Jason Von Flew, Von Flew on the reality show showed a big heart. I mean, he's got some definitely some tenacity and some big balls, and he's going to step to Riggs and not be intimidated. But I think you got to go with Joe Riggs. So that's we'll have no cause to argue then in a couple days' time about those picks. Unfortunately, Josh Koscheck versus Jonathan Goulet, another 170-pound matchup. Brendan, who are you picking in this?
I've got to. This is a tough one for me because I like Jonathan Goulet, and we have had him on the show, so. I'm trying to, now that I actually have to tell people my picks, trying to go more with my head than with my heart, but I think my head is also saying that I think that Goulet definitely has the more well-rounded game. He's far more dangerous on his feet than Koscheck. He's been working with some good high-caliber wrestlers, and I think if, again, he can, he's reported to be a little bit of a head case as well, and if he can keep it together, I think there's no reason that he can't win this fight. We did see a little bit of a slip up that almost lost him his last fight at the very end, but I don't see Koscheck getting him into any kind of slick submission. I just don't think that's his game. So if Goulet can stand, and if Goulet can stand up once he's taken down, I think he is going to be taken down a couple times. But I don't think that's going to be anything that Goulet hasn't seen before. So I think his preparation will shine through. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, but I see Goulet as taking this.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily unpopular, but maybe not what most are predicting. I definitely think this is going to be a very competitive fight, and I think Jonathan, is going to be. It's no secret, I think, that Josh Koscheck is probably planning on taking him down. And yeah, like you said, we talked to Jonathan, and he's been training with the Olympic or wrestling team, not the Olympic wrestling team. I don't think he said, but a wrestling team in Montreal, and with George St. Pierre. That said, I just think that Koscheck's wrestling game is pretty damn good, and I think it's going to be a close fight. But I think Josh will probably eke out a win. So I'm going to go with Koscheck.
All right.
Up next, Dean Lister versus Yuki Sasaki. Brendan, who are you picking in this? I got to admit, right off the bat, I don't know a terrible amount about Sasaki. So my pick in this is probably going to be a little bit, hindered by ignorance.
I don't know much about him either. I believe he is Japanese, Kelsey. No, I think that I'm actually looking forward to this fight just because of the way that Lister won his last fight. It looked so good on the ground, and it was actually quite refreshing to watch Lister fight on the ground because we were seeing some things that you don't often see. The way he was working his guard and the way he was setting himself up for, omoplata and stuff like that. You don't really see that in the way the really, really interesting sort of modified triangle that got the last fight. I see if this goes to the ground, then it's definitely Lister's game, and we'll see. Maybe it would be nice to see what Lister's got standing, because he claims to have been working on his standing game a fair bit, but we'll see. But I got to pick Lister, and I'm picking Lister because I don't think he can be beaten on the ground, and I think he can take it to the ground.
Yeah, again, I don't know a terrible amount about Sasaki. I've done a little bit of research, and I know that he's reportedly a pretty good fighter, solid fighter. But that said, I think Dean Lister has got his head in the right place. Did a story on him for Full Contact Fighter, I guess about a month ago, 2 months ago. And he had a lot of personal problems over the last 2 years when he was competing in Pride, and he seems like those are all behind him.
So Women's problems.
Pardon me?
Woman problems.
Yes. So I'm going to go with Dean Lister as well, so we've got no cause to argue.
All right.
In 2 days or whatever it may be. Next, Chris Leben versus Jorge Santiago. Who are you picking in this?
I think I'm going to pick Leben by decision. I think Santiago is going to stick in there with him. I think he's going to hang. I think he's tough, but I think Leben can't lose again. I think that was a reality check for him. I think he's probably got his head back straight on, and I see him eking out a victory against Santiago. Although Santiago looked great in his last fight, and I know that he's been training very hard again for this one. But I can't. I can't see Leben letting this one go. And again, I think if he does, it will be his own undoing. But you know, Santiago, it's tough to bet against the American top team, isn't it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to bet against the American top team in this last couple months, so I think it's going to go to decision.
Yeah, I think that Lehman's probably going to be a little bit, not necessarily cautious, you know, he's going to go for the win, but I think if there's any moments where he feels like he's in trouble, he's going to, you know, step back and regroup. This one is a hard one to call. I think I'm going to go with Santiago, though. I just think that, you know, he looked impressive. I think Chris is going to maybe be a little over-anxious. And you know what? And maybe part of me, I got to be honest, is just going with someone else so that, you know, I can have an opportunity to gloat.
I'm right on the fence, to be quite honest. I think that's why I said it. I think it'll go to a decision because Santiago's only lost maybe... actually been stopped a couple times, and the American top team seems to be really firing right now on all cylinders. So you know, it's tough for me to say that, but I think that Leben's going to eke out a victory. I think, put it this way, on Ultimate Fight Night or whatever it's called now, what's it called now?
It's called the UFC Fight Night.
UFC Fight Night. I think it will be difficult to get a decision against Leben. And let me just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. And then, of course, the main event, Diego Sanchez versus Carol Parisian. Stellar welterweight matchup. This fight I'm really excited about. Who are you picking, Brendan?
Again, my heart goes with Carl, but I think this is going to be a tough... He's in tough against Diego, and this is Diego's... make or break. I don't think he's going to be able to hold Caro down, which is what he'll have to do to get a decision. I don't see it happening in the way that he did against Diaz. But if he can, I think Diego will get the decision. But I think Caro has come back strong. The last fight, it's difficult to say because he won in such a dominant and unusual fashion for him. So I think I'm going to pick Caro. I can't go against my head or my heart with this one. I'm going to go because Diego has admittedly been admitted to being quote unquote greasy. I'm going to go with Carl by decision.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close fight, but I have to go with Diego. I just think that unless you know, I know Carl looked very impressive in his last fight, but I just think if you look back on some of his other fights, the abilities of others to take him down, I think is going to be, in the end, what hurts him. Not that he gets in a great deal of trouble when he's on his back, but I just think that Diego, you know, is that good in submissions as well, and I think sometimes people forget that. And I just think if you look at the past, the way judges score UFC fights, man, I think Diego's going to get the takedown, he's going to be able to avoid submissions, and that alone is going to get him the decision victory.
I think that the Carl might get a couple takedowns of his own. That's where my thinking tips it in the balance for Carl. He's taken down everyone that he's fought. I don't think he actually didn't take down St-Pierre, but I think maybe his thinking has been has turned around a little bit, and he's been very aggressive. He took he certainly took down Diaz almost at will in the first round, mm-hmm. and I think his aggression should shine through. And when he's been taken down, like you said, he doesn't really get into trouble because I don't think he really cares. But the way that fights have been judged recently in the UFC, I think takedowns, I think they still count, but I don't think they're counting. I don't think they're counting as much as long as there's some activity on the ground. So look for Carlo to, if he gets taken down, to work something tricky right away. And I don't think he's as easy. I don't think he's as easy to take down when he doesn't want to be taken down. So I don't think Diego is going to be able to impose his will on him the way that he did Diaz.
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see Thursday night. We got three fights here where we disagree. So one of us is going to be eating the proverbial manure pie come Friday. And also, dude, you know, you're going to screw up my chances of getting fighters. Don't, you know, what's this with the heart stuff? I mean, you're supposed to be like Knowlton Nash, very famous Canadian journalist, has never publicly said where his sympathies lie, politically speaking. And dude,
Kelsey, I'm not a journalist. I don't pretend to be a journalist. unlike other people in quote-unquote MMA journalism, I am just a guy talking on the interweb.
Yes. Ouch. That was. I think can't help but wonder if those comments were directed towards me.
As Kurt Vonnegut once wrote, opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one, and they all stink. So that's where I put myself firmly in the opinionated camp.
Well, yeah, it's true.
And I'll leave the journalism to you. How about that, Kelsey?
Yes. Me and my esteemed journalist colleagues would all appreciate the fact that you've now distanced yourselves in a very Robert Murdoch kind of fashion.
You and the one other guy and the nice lady.
Yes. All right, buddy. I'm looking forward to watching the fights, and I'm looking forward to rubbing your face in it when my picks.
Well, I have to apologize to Carlo and Jonathan and Chris ahead of time for jinxing them if that turns out to be the case.
Yes, I'm sure that they'll really. That's the first thing they're going to think about, and
your money out and bet against me.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
Okay,
all
take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.